Now for witness number 7, Flavius Josephus, who lived from 37 to about 100 AD, over 300 years after the supposed Septuagint was made. In 37 AD, he was born Joseph ben Matthias, son of a Levite priest. He was well educated and respected among the Jewish people. He bounced around from Herman's disciple to Pharisee to negotiator before Nero to free some priests. Then, in 66 AD, he objected to the Jewish rebellion against Rome, but then he joined the resistance, raised an army, fortified cities, until the next year, 67, where he retreated and then surrendered. Though he was imprisoned, he became friends with Commander Vespasian, who 2 years later, in 69 AD, became emperor. Then, Josephus served under Vespasian's son, Titus, urging his fellow Jews to submit and surrender to Rome. They didn't. In 70 AD, Jerusalem was destroyed. But Titus liked Josephus and took him back to Rome. In 79 AD, Titus became the next emperor. Josephus became his client and got great pay, became a citizen, and adopted the emperor's family name, Flavius. He was set for life. Now, as Flavius Josephus, he began writing history books in a manner pleasing to the Romans. What seems most likely is that Josephus got a lot of information from other people's books and even remembered stories that he was told and then put them all together in a history of biblical times and the Jewish people. You can see how Josephus used other people's stories in his version of the letter of Aristeas. You can find it in his book, Antiquity of the Jews, Book 12, Chapter 2. Josephus literally took the letter of Aristeas and paraphrased 100 of the 322 sections. Yes, I counted. Where Aristeas said I, Josephus put he. He removed the sections where Aristeas talks to his brother, the list of translators, descriptions of Jerusalem, and the philosophical questions that the king asked. He didn't say anything, though, that disagreed with Aristeas at all. In fact, in 12:2-12, Josephus said, you can check the book of Aristeas for more information. Everything Josephus says matches the letter of Aristeas as we have it. Josephus doesn't get us anything new at all. The only thing he does show is that by 93 AD, the letter of Aristeas was already written and circulating in Rome. I'll deal with the rest when I go over the letter of Aristeas. So, witness number 7 is excused. That's the end of the Hellenistic Greek Jewish writings. And there is still no real evidence to consider. No one has proven the existence of a BC Septuagint. So now, for the so-called Christian witnesses. Witness number 8, Justin Martyr, AD 100 to 165, over 400 years after the supposed Septuagint was made, he wrote in his first apology, chapter 31, a story that has so many important changed details, you have to hear it yourself. Quote, there were then among the Jews certain men who were prophets of God, through whom the prophetic spirit published beforehand things that were to come to pass ere they ever happened. Now, when Ptolemy, king of the Egyptians, was forming a library and endeavored to make a collection of all men's writings, he heard tell, among the rest, of these prophecies, and sent to Herod, who was then king of the Jews, with a request that the books of the prophecies might be transmitted to him. And King Herod sent them, written in their native Hebrew tongue of which I have spoken. But since the Egyptians were unacquainted with the things written therein, he sent yet again, and requested him, Herod, to dispatch men to render them into the Greek language. This was done, and the books remained with the Egyptians and are there to this day. This one took me by surprise. Justin is a saint to the Roman Catholics. But this was a big mistake or a bald-faced lie. First, Justin wasn't referring to Ptolemy II Philadelphus. The only one alive during the reign of King Herod was Ptolemy the 15th, Caesarion, son of Julius Caesar and Cleopatra the 7th. And how could Justin talk about Caesarion as king? He was king in name only. Cleopatra ruled as queen. Caesarion was only 10 to 17 years old during Herod's reign, which began in 37 BC. And Caesarion and Cleopatra both died in 30 BC. They had only those 7 years in common with Herod to arrange for the Septuagint to be translated, if the story were true. Besides, the Library of Alexandria had been around since the late 200s BC, started by Ptolemy I, Soter. No way was Caesarion just forming a library, end quote. So now, Justin said that it was the prophecies, not the law, that Ptolemy wanted translated. Justin rewrote the story to fit his argument about Hebrew prophecies, it seems. There's nothing accurate about it. But let's give Justin the benefit of the doubt. What if it was a case of mistaken identity? You see, in 36 BC, Cleopatra had a son with Mark Antony, her third child with him. Do you know what she named him? Ptolemy Philadelphus. Like him? But Egypt was taken over by Rome before he turned 6. You don't suppose Justin Martyr thought that Cleopatra's baby was the Ptolemy Philadelphus of the Septuagint story, do you? If so, he really got his wires crossed. I was taught that Justin Martyr was a reliable Christian witness. But now I'm stuck with 3 possibilities. Either he got his history book from the bargain bin, or he completely changed the story to suit his apologetic lesson, or he mistook a baby in 36 BC with the second Ptolemy in 276 BC. Regardless, he didn't verify the facts. His account is completely unhelpful. His testimony is, to say the least, not reliable. Witness number 8 is excused. That was the real Justin. But there's also a fake one. Witness number 9, pseudo-Justin. We have no idea who wrote in Justin's name or exactly when. Obviously, it was sometime during or after Justin's life, so at least 400 years after the Septuagint was supposedly written. Let me just sum up the story from Pseudo-Justin's writing, Exhortation to the Greeks, Part 13. First, in this story, Ptolemy asked for 70 wise men, not 72. Second, he had the Hebrew translators stay on the island, quote, where the Pharos lighthouse was built. But the Pharos wasn't finished until years into Philadelphus' reign, or after he died, around 247 BC. Third, this fake Justin then claimed, quote, these things which we declare unto you, men of Greece, are no myths nor fictitious history. We ourselves have been in Alexandria and have seen the traces, still preserved, of the cells on the island of Pharos, and have heard this story which we tell you from its inhabitants, who have had it handed down as a tradition of their country. You may learn it from others also, and chiefly from those wise and distinguished men who have written of it, Philo and Josephus. But there are many others besides. End quote. Philo and Josephus both were wrong. Calling them wise and distinguished doesn't make their story any more accurate. We declare unto you? Who's we? We don't even know who wrote this. The author lied about his name, saying he was Justin. How could we believe anything else he wrote? So, witness number 9 is excused. Witness number 10 is the famous often quoted Irenaeus. He wrote from 180 to 202 AD, over 450 years after the Septuagint was supposedly created. He declared that he learned from people who learned from John and the other apostles. But no other early church people mentioned Irenaeus in their writings, so we'd have to trust him without any evidence. But he claimed that all the apostles said that Jesus was 40 to 50 years old when he was crucified. Jesus was really about 34. You can see this from the dates of the rulers in Luke, the Passovers, and the age of the temple in John, and other early church events that show this clearly. Irenaeus is deceived or deceiving. Irenaeus is also credited as the first person to justify infant baptism. If that is true, Irenaeus might have triggered people into removing Acts 8:37 that says you may be baptized if you first believe in Christ with all your heart. And of course, a baby can't do that. So either change the doctrine or remove the scripture. And you know which they did. It's possible that someone he talked to might have heard John in an Ephesus church service before he died. But again, there's no evidence from any source that Irenaeus got any of his information from them or who they would be. It's hard to believe that anyone who paid attention to the apostles would say such inaccurate things as Irenaeus claimed. And there's no way to check up on anything Irenaeus claims he heard. I don't see any compelling reason to believe what he wrote. Let's face it, I don't trust the guy. His Septuagint legend is found in his Against Heresies 3:11-2, sections 3-4. He stated that it was the first Ptolemy, Ptolemy I Soter, the one who ordered the Alexandrian Library built, and not Ptolemy II Philadelphus, who arranged for the Hebrew and Greek language and culture-knowing Hebrews to come to Alexandria. He's the only guy in history to move the story back so far, from the son, Ptolemy II, to the dad, Ptolemy I. Irenaeus comes across as an unreliable historian at best, and a liar at worst. Witness number 10 is excused. Witness number 11 is Clement of Alexandria, who lived about from 150 to about 215 AD. Close to 500 years after the Septuagint was supposedly made. He was an instructor of the School of Alexandria before Origen. He's the guy I told you about in the vlog Original Sin, who wrote that it was okay to lie to people if he didn't feel they were worthy of his secrets. His story from Stromatis 1, sections 148 to 149, just blended the stories from pseudo-fake Aristobulus and the unreliable Irenaeus. Then he added a few other doozies. First, he added that Ptolemy 1 or 2 asked the Hebrews to translate, quote, the scriptures, both of the law and of the prophets. That's Justin Martyr's story blended in. Second, he doesn't ever mention again that part about translating the law. Clement wrote that each of the 70 elders, not 72, translated each prophecy and added the story that they were written in the form of, get this, Greek prophecies. Third, he lied and claimed that the scriptures totally perished during the Babylonian captivity of Judah, probably between 586 and 536 BC. Then he made up the second lie that Ezra, quote, was inspired to revive and prophesy afresh all the ancient scriptures, literally from nothing. No way. Clement's lie would mean that God's words perished and that he broke his own promise to preserve his words. I am amazed that Clement said this. Do you see why I don't trust these guys? The more you look, the more these proto-Catholic guys stink. We can trust the preserved words of God. They never perished. And witness number 11, Clement of Alexandria, has proved himself to be a liar. He should have been locked up, not just excused. That's not a mistake. That's full-out perjury. Witness number 12 is Tertullian. from about 155 to about 240 AD. Again, almost 500 years after the Septuagint was supposedly written. He wrote his version in his Apology, Part 18. Let's talk about what stands out in his testimony. First, he said that Philadelphia sent Demetrius of Phalerum as the superintendent over the library of Alexandria. He said that Demetrius was, quote, the most eminent philologist of his time, end quote, a guy who studied ancient books and determined if they were authentic. It would be hard to say that Philadelphus put such trust in Demetrius of Phalerum to set him over his library. Demetrius, it turns out, voted against Philadelphus to make his brother Ptolemy Caranus to be ruler instead of Philadelphus. So, when Philadelphus finally took the throne, he got his revenge by exiling Demetrius to Upper Egypt. And shortly after 283 BC, Demetrius died of a snake bite, right at the beginning of Philadelphus' reign. There is no way that Demetrius of Phalerum was a friend of Philadelphus. Second, he said that the 72 translators were held in high esteem by the philosopher Menedemus after they answered all the king's questions. But Menedemus lived far away in Greece, in Eritrea, and was never said to have visited Alexandria, Egypt. But it is very likely that his writings were in the library at Alexandria for whoever made up this stuff. And third, he claimed that the libraries of Ptolemy are still shown in the Serapeum, a branch library in the Temple of Serapis, that's all that's left today, with the actual Hebrew documents that were used by the translators. We can't verify that, since the entire Alexandrian library, including the Serapeum, were destroyed in 391 AD. So two out of the three we know are wrong for sure. That makes Tertullian's testimony unreliable. So witness number 12, Tertullian, is excused. Witness number 13 is a Catholic saint named Anatolius of Laodicea, who lived from the early 200s to 283 AD, over 500 years after the Septuagint was supposedly made. He grew up in Alexandria, Egypt in the time of Origen, ran an Aristotelian school, and wrote 10 books on mathematics. Only fragments of them survive today. He wrote in canons concerning the Passover, the Paschal Canon, and was quoted by Eusebius in Ecclesiastical History 7:32. It's so short I can read you the whole quote. Quote, the famous Aristobulus, who is enrolled among the 70, who translated the holy and divine scriptures of the Hebrews for Ptolemy Philadelphus and his father, he also addressed to those same kings books in which he expounded the meaning of the Mosaic Law. There are two things clearly wrong here. First, the famous Aristobulus is really pseudo-Aristobulus. It's a fake letter, as you saw. Second, no account anywhere claimed Aristobulus was enrolled among the 70 translators. Even the fake story about a guy who was telling about an event that happened over 100 years earlier. Just because you're smart in math, geometry, physics, astronomy, rhetoric, and dialectic, like Anatolius, doesn't mean you're good at history. Witness number 13 is excused.